ooh ee wah ting ting wah wah bing bang ooh ee wah ting ting wah wah bing bang yay.
You know, it's like, what are we doing here? We are in this room and we're all singing songs and I don't see the person to whom we're singing. You know, what is this?
Interface. Not the same questions, not the same answers.
Hello, I'm Brad Johnson, and welcome to Interface, a weekly examination of Christian perspectives on theology, philosophy, ethics, and culture with Adam Ayers, the pastor of Disciples Church in Costa Mesa, and Adam is also the founder of the Stoa Foundation. Joining us today in the studio is our engineer, Chris Holowaty, and me.
And the reason that we're all
I'm Brad Johnson.
Still, the reason that we're all in here today is because all three of us have been worship leaders, and we're continuing a discussion we started last week on worship from a worship leader's point of view. And I believe when we wrapped up last time, we were talking about what it means to have, when Paul said in Corinthians that all things should be done decently and in order, and we were talking about what that means. And so, Chris, would you like to start the discussion today?
Well, last week we ended up talking about Paul and what he meant when he wrote to the Corinthians about worship should be done decently and in order. And we talked about how that looks differently in different contexts. Adam brought up the case about having Christmas with a Latino family and how that looked a lot different from Christmas with his own family. In the same way, worship in an Episcopalian church is going to look a lot different than worship at a charismatic church. And also worship in Mexico is going to look far different than worship in Montana. So the issue of what does it mean to worship decently and in order does have some variance depending on where you are. Culturally, it's going to look different in different places. I think the key behind that is what is worship, which is maybe where we should have started, but let's pick it up here. In order to discuss how worship should be done, perhaps the question we should go back to is, what is worship in the first place? And something we brought up last week is, why do we gather in the first place? Why do we gather as a congregation? What is the purpose for us all getting together on a Sunday morning as a group, as the body of Christ? It's kind of habitualized for a lot of us. It's something you just do on Sunday morning. You go to church, you listen to a sermon, you sing some songs, you go home, you hopefully you feel better or you feel worse, whatever. Mm-hmm. What is the actual purpose of us getting together to worship as a congregation?
It's not so that we can meet up with other people to have lunch later.
I think it's a great place to make contacts, particularly business contacts, yes.
Well, along that line then, Chris, how is it that you frame worship as a worship leader? What is it that you are seeking to accomplish when you go in there, when you grab your guitar, when you're putting together a worship experience, particularly as a music leader, someone conducting a worship service at that point, utilizing music? What is it that you are envisioning and seeking to do? What's going through your mind as you get up there on the platform?
Well, for one thing, it's kind of overwhelming because it is kind of like trying to get two people to talk to each other, and you have no control over either party. So if I'm trying to set up a meeting between God and a congregation, I have to, A, hope that the congregation is willing to make this meeting, and hoping that God will show up. Mm. And that is not always a guarantee. There's also, I guess, one of the things that also frames my thinking is the passage in Hebrews. You know, let us consider how we may stir one another on to love and good deeds, and let us not forsake the assembling of ourselves together, as is the habit of some. And the idea that I want to stir people into communication with God. I want to stir people into being able to take perhaps is the only 45 minutes of their week that they get to have uninterrupted to just focus on God for a little while, to just think about who God is and what God has done, and to express back to Him how they feel about Him, what they are thankful for, what they admire God for. If nothing else, us. Part of what shapes my thinking is, how can I make this next 45-minute or hour-long or half or whatever the time period to be able to set up a date with all of us? Let's all have a big, you know, community picnic. Mm-hmm. We're all going to hang out and just enjoy God for these 45 minutes. Because for a lot of us, for myself, during the week, it's hard to find time sometimes. And so it's exciting to be able to offer that to people and to hope that, okay, here's your chance. If you've just completely blown through your whole week, here's your chance to sit and be still and remember who God is and remember who you are in light of him.
And Adam, how about along the same lines, how do you come to the worship experience? What are you seeking to accomplish?
Wow, I think that varies week to week. You know that I really started off to be an artist, not a minister. That my field was the arts. And so for me, this always takes me back to what goes on in doing some sort of a rendering, either a drawing or a painting or a sculpture or a carving or something, where what I'm trying to do in this, I think of Paul Tillich's words, the theologian, where he says, a symbol is a reality which points to a reality other than itself. And from an artist's perspective or from a linguistic philosophy perspective, from the perspective of someone trying to interpret like the words of Scripture or the traditions of the church, what to me it seems that I am doing as a worship leader is trying to somehow indicate as framing what it means to be a human being, what's going on inside of this little bomb shelter on top of my neck, you know, this little black box in here, and somehow indicate that in a symbolic way toward God, that I'm trying to frame who I am and sometimes discover who I am by the framing. And to help a congregation, like Chris is saying, to help a congregation do this in a way that they can frame their existence and communicate that to God.
For those who aren't familiar with the illustration, would you expand on the black box?
Oh, yeah. At the base of it, we live inside of our craniums. I mean, we live inside of our skulls, and all of our sensory stuff comes to us remote control. So we're really kind of stuck in these little black bomb shelters, you know, these little bone boxes on top of our shoulders. And we live at remote control, always trying to get out of those somehow and trying to get other input into those. But we are at a disadvantage in that we live separated from other human beings and separated from our worlds, living remote control. And so I think the work of art or the work of any kind of, when we speak words, when we do music, when we do renderings visually, anything that we do that way, we're trying to grab the perception and the experience that we have inside the little bone box on top of our necks, inside of our skulls, and somehow render it in the world outside of us in a meaningful way. Now, I know that sounds really, really theoretic, but take on a base level a statement like, I love you. What are you trying to do when you say, I love you? You're trying to take sounds, I love you, you know, these sounds, and the sounds aren't the meaning. The meaning is something behind that, because you can have the computer-generated, I love you, and that doesn't mean what it means when you say, I love you. And when you say, I love you, it's not the words that have that meaning, but your relationship with this person. And somehow you're trying to say, there is all this experience that I have inside of myself that expresses the way I'm oriented toward you, my will toward you, my heart toward you, what you mean to me, this relationship of we that we have. And you're trying to give that form. And in giving that form, you say, I love you. And that's supposed to mean all these things. But the inadequacy of that symbol to express the reality is in many ways frustrating. And so we have to find other ways. Flowers, candy, a night out, a caress, a kiss, presence, just being with one in silence, lots of words, a smile, all these aspects of indication of what's somehow inside. Even the patience of dedication, being with that person over and over again. And I think that's a lot what comes into play in Sunday morning worship, in congregational worship, that somehow we are trying to form who we are toward God, how we feel toward God, how we are oriented toward God, what we think about God in a variety of ways, kneeling, standing, sitting, shouting, shaking tambourines, lighting candles, sitting in silence, reciting the creeds, reciting the scripture, raising our hands, any of these different ways of doing things, to somehow say, this is who we are toward you, and this is who I am in the midst of us toward you, God. And let's open up this thing, even in the patience of doing it over and over and over again. Because, and I love you said by a couple who's been married for 50 years, has a depth of meaning because of its repetition that isn't there for a couple who's been married for 6 months. It means something more when you've said exactly the same words, exactly the same way for 50 years. And so in worship, what I'm seeking to do is say, how can we encounter the depth of words that have been said for 2,000 years, the depth of our humanity, frame it into a way that is somehow meaningful both to us and to those around us, and hopefully to our God. And maybe we can get on this in a bit about the meaningfulness to God of our worship, and then experience new understandings and new times with God in the middle of that expression. And what I want to try and do as I do that is use as many media as possible. Not when I'm saying media, I'm not saying, you know, and now the slideshows of waterfalls in the Yosemite Valley. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying kinetic movement, movement of the body, position of the body. It says something when you kneel before somebody. It says something if you bow. It says something if you repeat words that have been repeated for 2,000 years. You know, and it says something if you sing, if you shout, if you sing softly, if you sing ebulliently, if you clap your hands. So trying to use all of these different media.
There is a value in the experience of repeating a phrase or coming to worship each week in that I'm just realizing I've been married now for a whole week.
Yes. Okay.
And,
congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. And saying the words I love you to my wife now has a different meaning than 6 months ago. In a way, I only discover that as I say the words. And as I look at her and I say, I love you, and I see her as my wife now, or 2 weeks ago, the week before our wedding, saying that to her, or standing before the altar and saying those words. Each of those different times, the experience of it was very different. And the opportunity to have that experience comes about in being available for it and being there for it. In a similar way to me, that's what worship is each week. In coming that week and saying, okay, what does it mean now for me to say to God, I love you? Because the experiences I've had this week and what God has done with me are going to shape how I see him and how I understand him, even though I'm saying the same words. But the meaning behind it, I think that's what you're pointing to, is the meaning behind those words, those symbols, carries a new depth now that I guess as a leader, I want to be able to facilitate those opportunities. Here's a chance. It's the story of the people who, you know, get to the end of your life and you find your regrets of, I wish I would have said. Mm-hmm. And I guess in a sense, worship is that chance. I can't remember who the writer was, but there's someone who said, if we fail to see God now, will we recognize him then? Referring to the return of Christ. If we fail to see him now, we will recognize him then. I've always been haunted by that because there's a sense of, if I'm not constantly updating and constantly renewing my relationship with him, then I'm going to miss something. I'm going to miss out on being able to experience God in my 20s or being able to experience God this week. If I don't experience him this week, I will have missed something. And I guess worship, in a congregational sense, allows that to happen. You get to reinvent and rediscover something new about yourself and something new about God.
I heard somebody once give a sermon on the Spirit of God sometimes being like a wave, and that part of the idea was to align yourself with the power of the wave, that you can't control the wave, but you align yourself with the power of the wave and ride that wave. And part of worship, too, I think, is getting people to align themselves so that you're talking about not wanting to miss something, you know, as the Spirit of God is doing a new thing, because you don't know what God's going to do next. As he's doing a new thing, you don't want to miss out on that. And so it's like, okay, let's all try and get in line with this. So when the wave comes, we're all there, you know.
Very similar to what Jesus said to Nicodemus when he says, you know, the wind blows and you see the effect and you hear the sound, but you don't know from where it's coming or to where it's going. So is everyone who is born of the Spirit, this riding the wind, that we are like those little puffball dandelion things, you know, riding the wind of the Lord. And wherever the Lord takes us, that, you know, that's where the Lord wants us.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Something that you mentioned, Chris, really, I think is really valuable, that people forget about congregational worship. There's such an emphasis on individualism in our culture. The idea of, well, if I have the product, then that's all that matters. So if I have the information that I would get from being at church, somehow that's enough. That's like a parent saying, if I have the videotapes of my kids, I don't have to spend time with them. And the idea that you're saying of getting to the far end of one's life and looking back and saying, I wish I had said, I can't help but think of so many families where the kids are grown and the parents and the kids many times are saying, if only we had spent more time together. Now we have diminished relationship. It's not that you're any less a father or any less a daughter or any less a son. It's that you missed the time that you could have had together. And at the time, it was easier to be separate. At the time, it was easier to be dislocated from each other because there was awkwardness being together. This happens in all families because proximity brings tension, you know? In the same way in the family of God, it is an awkward thing to be relativized by other persons in a congregation and to worship with them, and it brings hassle. But at the same time, years down the line, you look and say, gosh, you know, I could have spent that time in the family of God and I didn't, and now I'm here all alone, and I have no community of faith to be with, and I lost all those years. And I think that's a tragic thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like picnics you could have had
right.
as a family, mm-hmm. and you didn't. You ended up getting to go and sitting in the corner, and everybody else had a picnic, and you sat there with your box lunch in your car, and you ate it in your car or in front of your TV set. I think that's sad.
Mm-hmm. The other part of this discussion, then, is what does worship do for God? Why does he expect us to worship him, command it, look for it? Why does he honor the contrite heart, the one who fully gives himself to him and seeks him out and worships him? Why? What is it about us and him that causes him to do that? Because it seems like if God is self-sufficient and he already knows who he is and what he is and how great he is, what's the purpose of us praising him?
And it's an interesting thing that we take it so much for granted in our Christian circles. To be outside of Christianity, it's like you're worshiping someone, you know, mm-hmm. it's a weird thought.
That's debasing to the human spirit.
Isn't that a little arrogant of God to...
I had somebody say that to me once.
Yeah.
Isn't that actually in Motherwell, Scotland? And I was sharing the Lord with this guy on the street, and he says, well, isn't that a bit egotistical of God to want people to worship him? I said, yes, but if you're God, you can be egotistical, you know?
Right.
And if you don't like it, make your own universe and live in it, you
right,
know?
Right.
So, but yes, yeah, it does seem, it's an odd concept to think that we're rendering worship to someone. And I don't know about you guys, but I'm sure I know that I have felt like sometimes I'll be in the middle of this going, what am I doing?
Mm-hmm.
What am I doing? I'm in a room singing, kneeling, lifting my hands, you know? It's like, you know, it's like, what are we doing here?
We are in this room and we're all singing songs and I don't see the person to whom we're singing. You know, what is this? What is this weird thing?
So I think that's something that's important to note about the decently and in order problem, that when we boil it all down, all human communication from a transcendent perspective, from the perspective of God in eternity, all human communication is monkey chatter. You know, when we think about it, what are we really in a cosmic perspective? We are little protein blobs stuck on a little, you know, rock, a pebble, buzzing through space. We're, you know, it's almost like we're held here by static cling, mm-hmm. you know? And we're tracing circles on the surface of this ball with these little animated dust bunnies, you know? And we're spinning around in the vastness of space, and we're somehow have the hubris, the arrogance to say, well, we have to order our words, our vibrations that we emanate into the gas that's clinging to this little dust rock. and these vibrations that we make are meaningful, you see? And that we have to say them just the right way. Otherwise, you know, God is very offended. But basically, God has to cross an infinite distance to talk to these little protein blobs stuck to the surface of this rock anyway. So, like, for example, I think about the difficulty with charismatic phenomena. I know this is kind of a live wire out there for all of you listening in your cars on the freeway. So if you are charismatic, don't take your hands off the steering wheel and raise them over your head. If you aren't charismatic, don't beat the steering wheel, okay? But the idea of charismatic utterance, say tongues, where there is an argument that goes, but that's meaningless conversation. That's meaningless linguistic utterance. The problem is, all human communication is meaningless in that sense. It's vibrations that we're making in the air. Now, if we are intending these to God, we have to trust that God somehow, in his infinitude, is transcending the fact that we're stuck in a little room somewhere and the sounds don't go beyond the walls, and that God is moving and reading our hearts and meeting us in our intentions and hearing our thoughts and our souls as we express that, and that God doesn't have to hear the words. We say that as persons of faith. So if one is uttering, you know, iki iki fitangawe andale pulale kimiwaki tula, and what one is intending is, it doesn't matter how ridiculous this sounds, if this is what it takes to follow God, I'm going to do this, even if I'm making up these sounds. I want to follow God, and this seems crazy to me, but being dunked underwater also seems crazy to me, and eating bread and wine seems crazy to me, but I acknowledge that God is true, and I'm going to try this. Then we have to say, does God not hear that symbolic utterance? I mean, there's symbols on pages that we look at, and we say, these are meaningful symbols. They're ink blots on wood pulp, you know? Mm-hmm. But we ascribe meaning to them. And I think that's what we have to recognize with the worship thing. We are seeking to utilize this to form our expression so that we can say, this is what I think I mean, and say that clearly, hoping that God, in his transcendence, meets us in what we think we are saying with those symbols.
Yeah, I think for me the question comes back to, what do any of us really have to offer God in the first place, which is nothing and everything. I mean, I have nothing to give back to God that he doesn't already have. He makes that very clear. Who's going to instruct the Lord Most High? You know, what are you going to give me that I haven't given you in the first place? It's almost like my dad used to give us money so we could go buy Christmas presents to give them back to him, you know. And mm-hmm. Still makes the gift very meaningful, though. Mm-hmm. And my dad still appreciated getting a gift from us, even though he had funded it. Mm-hmm. And I used to often really struggle with that, with, you know, I don't have anything really to offer God. It's all meaningless and pointless, and who cares? And yet there's somewhere in the back of my head I could hear God just going, yeah, I know, but I'm still glad to have you here with me. And it comes back to, what is my relationship to God in the first place? It's a love relationship. It's one of a parent to a child. And just as a parent doesn't look at their child and say, well, you need to have something very important to tell me. No, it's the fact that you're there. You know, a parent is excited that the child exists. And, you know, whether the child can create something wonderful or do something perfectly, it's not the point. The point is, you're here and you're offering something back to me freely. That's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like, here's the paper, here's the crayons, draw me a horsey. And you get a purple scribble back and you go, oh, wow. What a beautiful horsey. And the kid's raising their hands and grinning, and you're going, wow, I love you, you love me. And the kid's going, aga-paga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga-ga- child. And you're right, the presence of the child there, you don't create them because they're pragmatic and purposeful,
right.
functional.
Right.
You create them to love them.
Well, that's all we have time for today. Adam and Chris, thank you very much for being here. Chris, we'd like to thank you for engineering the show. I'd like to thank Media City Sound for helping to make Interface possible, and thank you for listening.